2 years, and
ordinary people see family intermarriage overall as something that is very positive.
A new poll reveals Pakistani and Bangladeshi Britons are most likely to support first cousin marriages amid calls for the practice to be outlawed. Should it be banned? That next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 6 o'clock, a local businessman and father of three has been charged over the crash in Liverpool on Monday. Assistant Chief Constable Jenny Sims from Merseyside Police has given this update.
The man arrested by Merseyside Police following the incident on Water Street has now been charged with 7 serious offences. Doyle has been remanded into custody and he will appear at Liverpool Magistrates Court in the morning.
The charges against 53-year-old Paul Doyle from West Derby include dangerous driving and causing GBH with intent. A car was driven into crowds during the city's Premier League victory parade, injuring 79 people, including a 9-year-old. Police searching for a teenage girl who fell into a reservoir in West Yorkshire have recovered a body. Emergency services were called to Batings Down near Rippenden yesterday afternoon. The UK government has condemned plans to establish 22 Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank. Israel's defence minister says the move will prevent the establishment of a Palestinian state, which he claims would endanger Israel. But a British Foreign Office minister says it's illegal and doesn't protect Israel. Sir Keir Starmer has warned the public not to trust Nigel Farage, calling his economic policies a mad experiment. The Prime Minister says the reform leader's promises, which include tax cuts, are an irresponsible splurge. And the Shadow Justice Secretary has admitted to LBC he broke Transport for London rules to make footage highlighting fare dodging. Robert Jenrick didn't seek permission to film on TfL property to confront rule breakers. He's told Ben it's ridiculous to suggest he should have.
You honestly saying that the blame should be attached to me for calling out rule breaking rather than the people who are actually breaking the law?
I'm simply asking whether you yourself followed the rules that TfL makes clear about.
Well, I didn't seek permission because that would have rather undermined what we were trying to do, which was
You broke the rules to make a video about rule breaking, Mr. Jenrick.
Look, I think what you're asking is completely ridiculous.
TfL says it's strengthening its capability to deter and detect fare evaders, calling it unacceptable. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed down 9 points at 87.16. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.18. LBC weather, patchy rain in central Scotland, North England and Wales tonight. Mostly dry elsewhere and breezy in the south, a low of 4. Patchy rain lingering in northern Wales and central and north England tomorrow. A few showers developing in south and east Scotland and Northern Ireland. Mainly dry and partly cloudy elsewhere, highs of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It's 6 o'clock. Ben Kentish here on LBC. Very, very good evening for just joining me here on the programme. I want to talk to you about a really quite contentious issue between now and 7 o'clock. It's the fact that in this country, people marrying their cousins is still legal. And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be according to the majority of the public. And it shouldn't be according to one Conservative MP, Richard Holden, a former chair of the party, who is introducing a new law in Parliament proposing that the practice is banned. He wants cousin marriages brought into the same bracket as marrying a parent, a child, a sibling or a grandparent, which is currently illegal. A poll today has revealed that most people in this country think the practice should be outlawed, but perhaps unsurprisingly, it's far more controversial, that idea, in communities where the practice is more common. For example, only 8% of white Britons think that first cousin marriage should be illegal, but 39% of those in the Pakistani and Bangladeshi communities think it should continue to be legal. Now, there's an interesting question here about where we draw the line between respect for different cultures and cultural sensitivities and the sort of view of the majority that says this is not something that we like and this is not something that we think should be legal in this country. And I wonder which side of that debate you come down on. Should the communities where cousin marriage, first cousin marriage, is more common and more popular be allowed to continue that practice free from interference from the state? Or do you think it is right that the law is changed despite the widespread opposition in particular parts of our country and our society to banning it? 03456060973 is the number. Richard Holden has today claimed that Labour is blocking his draft legislation going through Parliament. He says the poll is clear. The overwhelming majority of Brits, including those of Pakistani heritage, want to see first cousin marriage banned. The fact that Sir Keir Starmer and the Labour government are standing in the way of ending an outdated practice rooted in misogynistic cultural practices shows he's more interested in promoting cultural relativism than in ending practices that have no place in our country. Important point that even in the Pakistani community and the Bangladeshi community, more people still support the practice being banned than support it remaining legal. So if it's even in the communities where this is more common, more people are saying, yeah, let's ban it. It's out of order. It's outrageous. It's whatever. Is there any good reason for continuing to allow it? Or should it have been banned, perhaps, in your view, a long, long time ago? Should it still be acceptable in Britain in 2025 to legally marry your first cousin? 03456060973 is the number to call this hour. Your calls already coming in their droves on that. Those to come in just a few minutes' time. Let's talk first, though, on this to Anita Prem, founder of Freedom Charity, which aims to eradicate dishonour and abuse such as forced marriages. Anita, good to have you with us on the show. Cousin marriage, first cousin marriage, is it something for the law to intervene on and outlaw, in your view? Afternoon.
Good afternoon. So I think most people are surprised that forced marriage has just, you know, in 10 years ago has become a criminal offence and that first cousin marriages are allowed to happen in this country. I think when you speak to people, and we've been campaigning for over 15 years for first cousin marriage to be made a criminal offence in this country, most people are very shocked by the fact it's still allowed to continue and the law isn't on our side right now. So very grateful to Richard Holden for bringing in this white paper. So hopefully we can make this a criminal offence.
What's the problem, Anita, with first cousin marriage as you see it?
Well, of course, the first issue is the health concerns. You know, 50% more likely for a child of that first cousin marriage to have a genetic problem, life-changing, life-threatening. But also, as a charity, we see so many first cousin marriages that are the result of forced marriages. So where somebody is forced to marry their first cousin.
But, and that is currently, as you say, illegal. It is illegal to force someone
that's
to marry.
That's illegal, but someone right to marry their first cousin isn't. So if it was to become a criminal offence...
Yes, but if it is fully consensual, if somebody just falls in love with their first cousin right now, they can marry them under the law in this country. If it is entirely consensual, it's the impact, the potential impact on the child that is the main problem, as you see it.
I do. And also, you know, when we talk about first cousin marriage, if you think about years ago, you may have had villages, people didn't travel around. We're a very global country now, people from all over. There's no need to marry your first cousin. Most of us, the thought of marrying your first cousin is completely abhorrent anyway. I just think of my first cousin.
It is. And I think you're right. A lot of people will feel that way. And yet I'm sort of intrigued into what it is. Why are we so repulsed? And why do we sort of revile at this idea of marrying your first cousin? What is it that people do find abhorrent?
I think it's too close. It's too close in the gene pool. I think people are really aware of the health risks that are involved. I think people just don't see the benefit of it. And there is no need for this. I mean, when we look at the travelling community, some parts of the Southeast Asian community where this is very common, first cousin marriage is very common, it's something that belonged in the Dark Ages. It's not something that at all should be around today, and this has to be a criminal offence. We can't pander to people that are not supporting British values, and this certainly does go against British values.
What values does it go against?
It goes against the values of having free choice, because most first cousin marriages are forced. Let's be really clear about that.
Yes, but that in itself isn't a reason to ban it completely, is it? It's a reason to clamp down on forced marriages, but it's not necessarily a reason to ban all cousin marriages, including those that aren't forced.
Well, I think if you look at it the other way, then the health risks are too great. And there is no reason for somebody to have to marry their first cousin. There isn't, there's only five people on the planet you can marry and they all happen to be your first cousin. So I think, you know, we need to look at the health risks. I remember going to do a school assembly a few years ago. I was promoting my book, But It's Not Fair. We donated thousands to children across the UK. And almost every child in that school that we saw was a result of a first cousin marriage, and they all had severe disabilities. And it was absolutely heartbreaking. And it's something that people have been very scared to talk about. I know people that have spoken out about it and had death threats made against them. But people saying it's not for us to interfere with. But it does go against all our values, I believe. And it's not something that people want.
Clearly, in the poll backs that up. I agree with you. I think it should be banned. And yet people will say, well, yes, the risks are higher. And yet a child born to first cousins carries a 6% chance of inheriting a genetic disorder. That's compared to 3% for the general population. So it's still the case that if it's just one cousin marriage, and I know the point is when it's repeatedly down the generations, but if it's just one cousin marriage, there's still a 94% chance that that child will be fine.
And that's absolutely true. But when you look at first cousin marriage against first cousin marriage, and that gene pool is getting smaller and smaller, that's when that risk becomes significantly higher. And, you know, spinal muscular disease, there's so many things that do occur from it. And whether we like it or not, and forced marriage is illegal in this country, but we know that a huge amount of forced marriages or coercive marriages happen where someone is forced to marry their first cousin.
Right.
And that would actually help eradicate that as well. So it's not only the health, it's the whole issue of dishonour abuse, and the victims in this are predominantly young girls from Southeast Asia that are forced to marry their first cousin.
Anita, really interesting. Thank you very much, Anita, for coming on and talking to us this afternoon. Anita Prem, founder of Freedom Charity, which aims to eradicate dishonour abuse such as forced marriage. I'd see no good reason whatsoever for continuing to allow, in this country, in this day and age, people to marry their first cousins. I mean, Anita's just spelled it out. There's the health consequences, and there's simply the fact that the vast majority of this people in this country find it deeply, deeply troubling, the idea of somebody, even consensually, marrying their first cousin. Is it time to ban this practice, or would that be somehow culturally, I don't know, going too far? Is it a form of authoritarianism for the state to expand the rules on who you can and can't marry? I struggle with that argument, given the state says, well, you can't marry your siblings or your children or your parents. Why on earth would it be too far for the state to also say, and by the way, you can't marry your cousins either? It's long overdue, in my view, and I don't really understand why this hasn't happened an awfully long time ago. What about you? Is it time to ban first cousin marriage, or can you see any good reason at all for keeping that practice legal and not clamping down on it through the law? Give me a call, 03456060973. WhatsApp me on that number. Text me this evening on 84850. Let me know what you think of this. Let's come straight to your calls on this. Mohammed is calling tonight from Luton. Mohammed.
Hi, Ben. How are you doing, fella?
Yeah, I'm good, sir. How are you?
Yeah, very good, very good.
Good, good, good.
I've got two daughters. My brother's got two sons. And we'd agreed very early age that we wouldn't let them marry each other, because we know, you know, we're educated, we understand the genetics, what can happen, okay? Now, where I live in Luton, there's a big Pakistani and big Bengali community, and I can see the deformities, I can see the differences in people who've had married first cousins and their offspring, and the genetic differences, I can see it. And it's not right.
It's cruel. It's cruel on the children, isn't it?
Of course it is, yeah.
There's no shortage of other people that you could marry and have children with. And if you choose your cousin, you are putting your future children at much higher risk of all sorts of issues. And I think that's frankly disgusting, actually.
Well, my children, I'm a Muslim, I'm Indian. My children are married outside the community, so as my brothers.
Was that unusual?
No, well, yeah, I think so. Because a lot of people still marrying first cousins, and I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
You know, you can see the colour of their skin, the colour of their eyes, their growth deficiencies, everything. There is a huge difference.
If someone says to you, you can have children, but if you do this one thing, it will double the chance of your children having a genetic disorder,
and you do
it anyway, then, I think you shouldn't do it. But if you want to go ahead and do it, then the law should stop you.
Yeah, the genes are too close. It's not good.
Yes, and that's the reason that I think a lot of people do find it sort of disturbing, because we know instinctively that this is something that nature is, you know, nature sort of has built us to have a problem with for that very reason.
Definitely. Yeah.
Is it for the law, though, Mohammed? Because you and I can disagree with it. There's a slightly different question, isn't there, about the law being extended to cover it, I suppose?
How do you stop it?
How do you stop it otherwise, you mean?
How do you police it?
How do you enforce the law?
Yeah.
Well, you'd say that if somebody goes to a registration office and says, I want to get married, or wherever it is that they legally sign their marriage certificate, they have to prove that they are not first cousins.
Prove that they are.
How do you mean?
How do you prove that they are first cousins?
Good question. If they say we're not, then how do you prove that you can't?
Yeah,
you can't,
exactly.
Short of some sort of DNA test, and that's a slippery slope too. Very fair point, Mohammed. Is it easy to enforce? No. Does that mean we shouldn't do it at all? No, I don't think it does. Because even asking people the question, if they lie, then they would be guilty of, I don't know what the charge would be, some sort of perjury or deception or fraud even. And that barrier might be enough to discourage a lot of people from doing it. You're right to say it might also not discourage others. Interesting call to kick us off. Thank you, Mohammed. 03456060973. Is there any good reason why it should remain legal in Britain to marry your first cousin? Keep your calls coming in on that. Ben Kentish here on LBC 6:15.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
Just accept we need stop and search.
Straight to the point.
This is a shocking night.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
When was the last time your party was in touch with the electorate?
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
Tired of watching your uninvested cash do nothing? With the Bank of England base rate reducing, investment platform IG is doing something extraordinary. IG is offering a whopping 8.5% AER variable on all uninvested cash. Yes, 8.5%. Just open an account, transfer money in, and make one investment before May 31st to unlock this incredible rate. Visit IG.com now to open an investment account today. Your capital is at risk. GIA, ISA and SIP accounts only. Boosted rate applies until 31st August 2025. Terms and conditions apply.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco. Every little helps. Darling, hold my hand.
Nothing beats a Jet2 holiday. Discovering amazing destinations like Ibiza, Lanzarote and Crete. And relaxing in the sun with award-winning VIP service from the Which? Travel Brand of the Year 2024. So, book now from London Luton Airport with Jet2 Holidays. Package holidays you can trust. Patronage or protected, subject to availability and conditions.
Ben Kentish on LBC.
6:18. If you are married to your cousin or somebody in your family is, really, really intrigued to hear from you this hour about what you make of it and whether you think some of the things that have been said so far are unfair, maybe unjust about you or your relatives. 03456060973. Simon is calling this evening from Scarborough. Simon.
Good evening.
Good evening to you.
Good evening. I'll keep this kind of brief, but I would like to tell you a little bit of a family story involving white middle-class girls from a white middle-class family in rural Hertfordshire. Once upon a time, there were two nice middle-class sisters. I'm going to change the names. The names don't matter. One had a daughter and one had a son. and they all grew up in leafy Hertfordshire. And the daughter of Sister A had a massive crush on the daughter, on the son of Sister B.
Right.
And they got married. They had a Christian marriage in the estate church on the estate with full blessings of both families. But you know, at the end of the day, they were first cousins. They went on to have a very, very happy married life together. They had a son who went on to Cambridge University, did a PhD in mathematics. He was headhunted by the likes of PricewaterhouseCoopers and all that lot, but he said, no, I don't want to do that.
Right.
So he now works for a charity.
And who are these people, Simon?
So
is this a real family?
Yeah, it's a real family. Oh, yeah, it's my family.
It's your family?
My grandmother's daughter married my grand aunt's son.
Right, and they were first cousins?
So they were first cousins.
And how did that go down in the family?
Well, it was a bit weird, but we've always been a very close close family, yes, particularly on that side of the family.
Close.
But it all went perfectly well with full blessings. As I say, they went on to have a son who went to Cambridge, got a PhD, has a very successful life. He now works as an accountant.
So are you saying there's no real issue with it?
Eyebrows raised, but look, I'm trying to put forward a case history where no harm was done. I think that there's a little bit of a subtext with inferred racism. Oh yeah, they all marry into each other, they all do this, that and the other, which I think is distasteful, because I'm holding up an example of a very, very middle class, very, very white, very, very Christian British family.
Fine, but that is highly unusual, Simon. It's highly unusual, as you say, in the sort of white British groups, and it's far more common in other groups. And what I think is interesting is that even in the communities where it is far more common, far more culturally accepted, more people in those communities, according to this YouGov poll today, think it should be banned than think it shouldn't be. So if even they think it's something that it's that time has come to say enough is enough, we don't want this to be legal anymore, then shouldn't the rest of us take our lead from them?
All I can think of is my uncle and my auntie, who are technically cousins, which are, they made a perfectly successful life of it. Produced a very, very healthy and happy son who's gone to make a great career. He's married. He's got a daughter.
And that's great, Simon. But people do other high-risk things when it comes to children. It doesn't mean it's a good idea. You know, drinking a lot of alcohol in pregnancy, smoking in pregnancy, for example, people do that and there's no harm done. But we still know that in many cases that will harm the baby. And that's why we have a strong kind of guidance and advice that mums shouldn't do that. Do you see what I'm saying? Just because it worked out all right, it doesn't mean it's a good thing to do. And we know that when it comes to first cousin marriage, the risk to the child doubles.
Well, do we have statistics on that?
Yes,
is it genuinely really
evidence.
Double?
Yes.
I mean, let's leave the Egyptian dynasties aside.
No, this is solid scientific data. And of course, the bigger problem is if it's one generation that marries their cousins, and then the next generation, and then the next generation after that, then that problem is multiplied.
Well, my nephew didn't do that. He didn't. It's not an Egyptian dynasty. He went to university, fell in love with someone else. So that broke that particular cycle. Do I think it should be made illegal? Thou shalt not. No. It's a little bit weird. I mean, if the local priest or Methodist said, you know, I'm not really happy having this in my church. Sorry, it's my church, my rules.
We can't leave these sorts of decisions about what we find acceptable and what we as a country are willing to tolerate down to individual religious leaders. There has to be, I think it has to be a legal matter. Because you, I don't know, Simon, you might find a priest somewhere who's happy to marry a father to his daughter. I mean, probably wouldn't. But nobody in their right minds think that should be illegal, and it isn't, thankfully. Why is it illegal to marry your sibling but not your cousin? And the answer is, well, actually, the genetic risk of marrying your sibling is higher than marrying your cousin. But also the truth is that marrying your cousin carries a far higher risk to your child than not marrying your cousin. And that alone, for me, means it should be illegal. Simon, we agreed to disagree on that. Really interesting story and perspective. Thank you for calling in this evening. Thanks, Simon. Alishbus calling from Richmond. Evening, Alishma.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I've never called in before, so I'm a bit nervous.
Oh, you're a new caller. It does say that on my screen. I didn't see it. Welcome to you, Alishma. Great to have you on.
Great. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very, very well, thank you. What is it about this conversation that made you pick up the phone for the very first time?
So I'm born British, but with Pakistani heritage, and it's quite common, I think, to get married to your cousin. Mm. I personally don't agree with it because of the, birth defects associated with, the children.
Yeah.
And then obviously there's the risk of dishonouring your family in brackets, because I feel like there's pressure to, uphold standards within the family.
What would the dishonour be? Sorry, Lish, but it would be in marrying your cousin or not marrying your cousin.
I think not marrying your cousin. Right. I think you'd kind of get frowned upon. I don't know if people would agree with me on that, but I think that's my personal opinion.
That there's a strong cultural pressure and a social pressure to actively find a first cousin to marry.
Definitely. And it kind of raises the question of how consensual it actually is, because there's obviously pressure on you from, relatives or might be your parents. Thankfully, mine aren't like that. I'm quite lucky, being born and raised here, very liberal. But I know other people might, be in that predicament where they might feel troubled and feel like they do have to marry a cousin.
What's the logic? What's the reason for that pressure to marry such a close relative?
I just think it could be a cultural tradition. I don't want to necessarily bring religion into it, but I think, people might feel like they've got to continue their family lineage.
Right.
Yeah. Right,
by keeping it very tightly within the same family.
Absolutely, yeah. I think just, something that's quite close-knitted, perhaps.
And you would support, you're clearly against it, Alish, but would you support the law getting involved and saying, right, enough of this, this is now illegal?
I don't think it should be illegal necessarily. Being in London, obviously, it's pretty diverse, and there is, you should be entitled to do what you do. If you want to marry your cousin, grand. I still feel like it's a bit frowned upon, and medically speaking, I kind of disagree with it. It's not something I'd want to do.
Yes, but it's not for the law to necessarily intervene.
I don't think so. You mentioned the poll. How many? You kind of mentioned something along the lines of, is it a certain number of British Bengalis or Pakistanis that
it's
agree
the Bangladeshi
with it?
And Pakistani communities. So this is a YouGov poll. It found that 47% of people in those communities thought it should be banned. 39% thought it should stay legal. So reasonably close, but still a majority in favour of banning it, even within those communities.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, I don't think it should be illegal necessarily, but I do feel like it's something...
You've got an ethical... Yeah, fair enough. I hear you, Alishma. Thank you very much. Great first call. Mohammed's another new caller in Brent this evening. Mohammed.
Hello, good evening. So how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. Hope you are too.
Yeah, I'm about to. Thank you very much for asking.
Okay, cousin
I'm
marriage.
I'm actually not against it, of cousins getting married to each other, as long as it's not forced. Maybe we could say 50, 60 years ago, there was kind of a force because of the tradition back. I'm originally Somalian, so I'm talking about my own origin from Somalia.
Mm.
Maybe they could force each other, or whatever, but nowadays there's something called force. Nobody could force anything that you don't want to do. But if they liked each other, what's the purpose of saying no to them? They want each other. That's fine. Go ahead with it. Let's give you an example. Like they're saying 6% that kids may have some issues. Yes or no?
Yes. So the chances of a child having a genetic disorder double from 3% to 6% if their parents are first cousins. Yes.
Right. Now, Mr. Kintish, I'm sorry, I'm going to put you as an example. Mr. Kintish, get married.
I haven't married my cousin. Why are you making an example of me?
No. I'm saying examples. Like I'm in Europe now. I've been in Europe for the past 25 years.
Okay. Right?
And let's say you are married to a woman from Romania.
Okay.
Or you're married to a woman from Czech Republic or something like that.
Okay.
And you've got three kids. And all three kids have some issues in them. You have nothing to do with that woman that you get married to. She is not British. She has nothing to do with you. Blood-wise, far away from each other. Right? But you still bring the kids that have some issues.
But
cousins get married. They don't have their kids that don't have any issues.
Sure. But the risks, scientifically, the risk doubles. So if you marry your cousin, you are putting your future children at twice the risk of having a genetic disease.
And scientifically, has been that proven?
Yes.
It's been proven.
Yes.
I'm not sure about that, but I need to look at this as well. Thank you for taking my call, sir. Thank you very much.
Mohammed, really interesting. Mohammed saying that it should remain legal. Mohammed, let me just ask you, is it something that you would consider?
If my daughter or my son, like my nephew or my niece,
yes,
I wouldn't stop them.
You'd have no issue with it?
No, I would tell them, go ahead, if you liked each other.
Even knowing that your grandchildren have double the risk of a possibly very debilitating and disabling disease?
Whatever comes, it comes.
But you can reduce that risk. You can reduce that risk by finding someone to marry, anyone to marry, apart from your first cousin.
I'm not going to be the one who's stopping in front of my child and tell them, oh, you cannot get married to this one or that.
What if they wanted to marry their sibling?
There's no chance of getting married to your sibling anyway.
Would you stand in their way in that situation?
That's not going to work anyway. You can't marry your brother or your sister. There's no chance of doing that.
But would you stand in their way if they wanted to?
Definitely yes.
So why would you block them marrying their sibling but not their cousin?
Because they are not siblings; they are cousins. What's the
sort of logical difference? They're still close relatives.
Close relatives, I understand that, but they're not brothers and sisters, are they?
But why do you draw the line there?
Line there because it's weird getting married to your brother.
But a lot of people, I would say, it's weird getting married to your first cousin, respectfully.
You look at it as a weed, but because as I said,
most people in this country do think it's there's something wrong with marrying your first cousin.
But is this something that you just came up time ago? I believe that rich people have something like that before, aren't they?
What rich people
as,
did you
as
say?
As the gentleman that spoke before, he said my great auntie and great auntie, their son and their daughter get married.
Yes,
and nothing happened.
But that's because it's still legal. And I'm saying I don't think it should be, and you're disagreeing. Interesting, Mohammed. Thank you for the first-time call from Brent this evening. Loads of your calls coming on this. Come to more of those in just a moment. Ben Kentish in for Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. Also after the news.
Do you want to go back and pay like everybody else? Do you think it's all right not to pay? Why don't you go back and pay? You can say off as much as you want, but everyone else has to pay.
Robert Jenrick goes on a one-man vigilante crusade today against London's fare dodgers, claiming that law-breaking in Britain is out of control. We'll ask the Shadow Justice Secretary what he's up to just after the headlines with Amelia Cox.
A father of three has been charged with several offences over the crash at Liverpool's Premier League title parade. 53-year-old Paul Doyle is accused of seven offences, including dangerous driving and causing GBH. Police searching for a teenage girl who fell into a reservoir in West Yorkshire have recovered a body. Specialist teams were drafted in following reports the girl fell from a dam near Rippendon yesterday. And the Trump administration says it will go to the Supreme Court on Friday unless an appeals court grants it its request to block the tariffs ruling. A court in New York ruled the US president acted outside of his authority when he used emergency powers to impose the taxes. LBC weather, patchy rain in central Scotland, North England and Wales tonight. Mostly dry elsewhere and breezy in the south, a low of 4 degrees.
LBC, this morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Here's the tale of the tape. In the blue corner, you have a fairly burly 51-year-old police officer, Stephen Smith, who has a pepper spray and extendable nightstick. With him is the 36-year-old police officer, Rachel Camato, who has a taser. Both of them have stab vests. In the other, you have a 92-year-old man in a wheelchair with one leg and a 4-inch butter knife. I warn you, this is distressing.
Donald, put it down! Taser!
This is a day of utter shame for the police. The fact that they were cleared at Southwark Crown Court I find truly extraordinary, but they will now face disciplinary proceedings. It can only hope that they're both booted out.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So don't give up, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Next time you walk their dog or feed their cat, when you pop by for a cuppa or just stop for a chat, tell your friends about pension credit. They could be missing out on an average of over £4,000 per year to boost their pension income. Pension credit also unlocks other support like help with heating costs, council tax, and a free TV licence for people over 75. Tell them to search for pension credit on gov.uk. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
Ben Kentish on LBC.
6:35 the time. Mark on WhatsApp seems to somehow have got the idea that I have married my first cousin. Mark, just to put you right, I put the record abundantly straight. No, I did not marry my first cousin or anybody else that I have any blood relation to, as far as I know. And I am I hope to God that that is right. But there you go. Mark in Harrow, just to be very clear on that. Let's talk to Mohammed, a new caller in Queen's Park. Mohammed, someone who I think did marry your first cousin.
I did, yes. I did marry my first cousin. I mean, her mum was the eldest of my granddad, but from previous marriage. So right. we had two wonderful kids. They are now 27 and 24, successful in their career, engineering and medicine. However, I mean, the reason why this is happening in the Islamic world or Arabic world is A, I think, as far as I know, to keep the wealth within the families.
Right.
B is because of the dating is not permissible or whatever. It's not allowed. So for that's why the family choose spouses or whatever, vice versa.
When you say dating's not allowed, what element of, I mean, meeting people, seeing if you get on with them, that's not allowed, Mohammed?
Was not allowed. I mean, we're talking was not allowed in my, I mean, my our parents' time and all that. Basically, you are, you know, choose. You just said I'm going to marry this, and that's it. Having said that, back to the issues of disease and disabilities.
Yep.
I can tell you, I mean, back in Morocco, most of our family, I can see, I was astonished when I see about 50 of our family, each one is married, this, that, cousin, blah, 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 you know. But only one, my sister who married my cousin, who the kids, the first one died at 12. She was severely disabled and she was treated in Switzerland and France.
Right.
And the doctor says, because three generations backwards, the granddads were blood related.
Right.
So that's why this
it's when
anomaly.
It's cousins marrying cousins who then have children who marry other cousins, and the gene pool becomes so small that you get these defects and these disabilities. So is that not a strong argument, Mohammed, respectfully, and I don't mean this disrespectful for you, for making illegal what you and your wife did?
I'll tell you something. You don't need to I am for that, but I can't.
Are you for banning it?
I can assure you, our kids, like my son now, yes. I didn't tell him what to do. He just said, Dad, I've seen this lady. I'm going to do, I'm going to be engaged to her. And she is from a different country, from a different, you know.
But you're for banning first cousin marriage, even as someone who married your first cousin?
I would say yes, for different reasons. I mean, one is for two reasons mainly. One is to stop, because I know there is a health issues there. Yes. A plus, what's the other one I was going to say, is the when you disagree, when you divorce, then the problem...
There's all sorts of problems if you divorce your first cousin. Yes, I can absolutely imagine that. Mohammed, fascinated to talk to you. Married his first cousin, but thinks it should be outlawed now. Thank you, Mohammed, in Queen's Park. More to come on that very, very shortly indeed. First, though, Robert Jenrick, the Shadow Justice Secretary, on a bit of a crusade today. He's taking on London's transport fare dodgers, it seems, single-handedly. Have a listen to this. This is some of a video that Robert Jenrick, Shadow Justice Secretary, posted on social media this morning.
Excuse me, do you think it's all right not to pay? Seriously, why do you go back through the barrier and pay? Do you want to go back and pay like everybody else? Do you think it's all right not to pay? Why don't you go back and pay? You can say off as much as you want. But everyone else has to pay. You're carrying a knife, you say? Nearly one in 25 people using London's public transport aren't paying for it. So there's eight officers down there, but 1 minute away, that gate's wide open. It's also just annoying watching so many people break the law and get away with it.
Robert Jenrick, the fare-dodging London vigilante. Well, I asked the Shadow Justice Secretary what prompted him to go on this one-man mission to stop people dodging fares.
Well, I was fed up. I saw people dodging on the tube when I was down in London and elsewhere in the country. And I felt that ordinary people who were paying for their tube or public transport, you know, doing the right thing, were made to look silly or foolish by these people who were flagrantly breaching the rules and nothing was happening about it. And so, you know, whilst in politics you do speeches, you do urgent questions in Parliament, and that's important, that's my job, I felt sometimes you've got to get out of Westminster, listen to the public and shame the authorities into action.
What is this a sign of? Because in the video that you've done on this, you link it to shop theft, you link it to the tool theft, you link it even to the existence of weird Turkish barbers, as you call them. Is there a deeper problem here that you're trying to highlight?
Yeah, I think this is one example of many where the fabric of society is being torn apart, is being shredded by small acts of law breaking, sometimes actually very serious ones, whether it is graffiti, it's people on the tube playing loud music without headphones, whether it's mobile phone theft, tool theft, shoplifting. Many of these things are on the rise at the moment, not just in London, but across the country. And we've got to see the state, the authorities stepping up and taking action. Because I subscribe to the broken windows idea that if you allow one small act of law breaking to take hold, many more people will join in, and then some of those people will go on to commit more serious offences, and the issue will just get ever, ever worse, and it leaves the rest of society feeling that the public realm isn't the safe and clean place that they want to live in, and as if the rules just aren't being applied equally. And so I wanted to highlight this, but it's one of a number of issues that I've been taking up, whether it's tool theft, for example, where tradesmen's vans are being broken into and their tools are then being sold in plain sight at car boot sales across the country, or litter, where you're seeing that fly tipping in particular increasing in many communities.
Well,
we've really got to see everybody step up and take action.
What do you put that down to, Mr. Jenrick? Because, of course, the rules need to be enforced, but we ultimately rely on people to do the right thing. And what you're saying is, increasingly in this country, in Britain today, people are choosing to do the wrong thing. Why?
Well, I think it's partly because the authorities are just not taking action against some of these so-called small minor crimes. And I just don't think that they are minor crimes. I think that they contribute to a broader picture, and some of them are having a very profound impact upon people's lives. You know, shoplifting, for example, even people who steal small things. You know, this is having a big impact to the point that it's costing everyone more money in rising prices, and it's making particularly independent shops lives impossible. And tool theft, you know, breaking into a tradesman's van has a massive impact on their life, their livelihood. I've even met or read of, rather, tradesmen who have contemplated suicide when they've woken up and found that their tools have been stolen. You know, so these things are actually very serious. And I don't think anyone, whether it's politicians or the police or the courts, should be considering these to be minor crimes. I think they should be taking action against them.
Transport for London prosecuted nearly 20,000 people for fare dodging last year. They've increased the fines for that offence. They're spending £22 million on cracking down on it. This idea that the authorities are turning a blind eye, it doesn't match up to the facts.
Well, I don't think that's right at all, frankly, and I don't think your listeners would agree with you. If you take the example you've given of fare dodging, yes, in London, TfL's own statistics show that 1 in 25 journeys are not being paid for, that that's costing other users of public transport about £130 million a year, yep, which just drives up fares. I suspect it's much higher than that. As you've seen from the massive reaction to the video I've done today, many, many people across the country have seen this in their daily lives, and it drives them mad. Just when I was at Stratford Tube Station for about an hour on Saturday morning, I saw people probably every couple of minutes doing this. So I think these problems are much more prevalent than you might imagine. And I don't think the authorities are taking action. Even TfL's own stats suggest that the number of people being prosecuted for fare dodging has gone down. It fell during COVID, as you might expect, and has not got back up to its pre-COVID levels. And when I was at the station, I actually saw eight officers doing very little, to be honest.
It's easy to call for the police and the authorities to do more. Under your party, the Met budget was reduced by £1 billion since 2010. Over the last 14 years, that the budget decrease equates to 32% in real terms. It's easy to go on social media and do these videos saying it's outrageous the authorities aren't doing more. The bottom line is they don't have the resource to do so because your party cut their budgets, Mr. Jemmerich.
Well, I don't think that is the case in every instance. If you look at the one that I've taken up, at Stratford Station, there were at least eight officers there who were supposed to be doing enforcement. Very little seemed to be happening. I even put on the video where there was one officer who was sat with his feet up, doom-scrolling on his phone, whilst the gate was wide open and people were coming in and out. They didn't seem to be tapping in and out, so many of them may well have not been paid for all I know.
You are the Shadow Justice Secretary. Did you ask him about that officer?
No, I did chat to some of the officers when we handed over one of the individuals that we'd met, but obviously I left it to them to take whatever action they thought was appropriate. But hopefully I've raised the issue and they're going to take more action now, because from the groundswell of support there seems to be for this one video, you can see that people, not just in London, yes, but across the whole country, want this to be taken much more seriously.
And
I want, frankly, Sadiq Khan to step up. He's supposed to be the mayor of London. Where's he in this debate? Why isn't he doing more?
And you're right to highlight people, the need to people to play by the rules. That is, a British sense of fairness and justice is something most people, I think, will understand and connect with. The rules on TfL filming make very clear that you have to have permission to film on TfL property. Did you seek that permission to make this video?
Well, you're honestly saying that the blame should be attached to me for calling out rule-breaking rather than the people who are actually breaking the law?
I'm simply asking whether you yourself followed the rules that TfL makes clear about.
Well, I didn't seek permission, because that would have rather undermined what we were trying to do, which was
You broke the rules to make a video about rulemaking, Mr. Jemmerich.
Look, I think what you're asking is completely ridiculous. I had given notice to TfL that I was going to go on a given day and see whether they are enforcing the rules, I think we can guess that it might have been a slightly different outcome. My polite advice to TfL is, instead of taking action against the people who are calling out their inactivity, get on and do your jobs.
But what you're
saying, take action against the people who are fare dodging. I think Londoners will be absolutely incensed to hear that TfL are wasting their time criticising someone who's calling out their failure rather than taking action to correct it.
They're just pointing out that you made a video about rule breaking, having broken their own rules yourself. And what you're saying to me, it seems, is, well, if you think there's a good reason to break TfL rules, then go ahead and do it.
Look, if TfL want to take action against me, bring it on. I think what they are doing is completely ridiculous and laughable. They should be spending their time trying to apprehend the people who are actually breaching the rules by not paying for their fares. That is what every single Londoner will be thinking when they're listening to this programme right now.
That was Robert Jenrick, the Shadow Justice Secretary. Lots of people getting in touch. Pretty supportive, I must be said, of Mr. Jenrick's anti-fare dodging campaign. Ben Kentishere on LBC. In a moment, more of your calls about whether it's time or long past time to outlaw first cousin marriage. That next.
Coming up at 7 on LBC, Ian Dale.
Robert Jenrick has been confronting fare dodgers on the London Underground. Now, I've had my differences with Mr. Jenrick, but on this, I think he's performed a public service. Do you?
Ian Dale on LBC.
Oh, no, 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 no.
In the time it takes to unsend a risky text, you could find out if you're one of the Jaguar or Land Rover owners that's owed compensation. Visit claimsforcars.com. Answer a few easy questions and you'll find out in seconds. If your car has a faulty DPF filter, you could have a claim. Claims for Cars is helping people get back thousands on a no-win, no-fee basis.
Phew.
Get the answer in seconds at claimsforcars.com.
Looking for a fun-filled day out this spring? The O2 has it all. Catch the latest blockbuster at Cineworld or challenge your friends with interactive football at Toker Social. Take on darts, mini golf and more at Boom Battle Bar. Get active with a game of paddle tennis, climb to new heights or take flight with an indoor skydive at iFly. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavours from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets from only £7 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Find out if you can claim compensation for a missold PCP agreement or a faulty DPF filter. Just visit claimsforcars.com and you'll get the answer in seconds.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC with Ben Kentish.
No doubt you agree with first cousin marriage, Ben, says Lee. About 25 minutes later, after I said many times I think it should be banned. But do you think it should be banned? Is it right that first cousin marriage is still legal in this country, as a poll finds the vast majority of people in Britain think the answer is no and that it should be made illegal, as one Tory MP is campaigning to happen? Let's talk to Mariam in Weymouth. Hi, Mariam.
Hello, Ben. I'm just ringing to inform people, really. I'm 74. My parents, my mother's parents were first cousins, and they would have married, I guess, around 1919. She was born in 1920. And she always used to say, well, there's nothing much wrong with me, which is fine. There wasn't, because earlier on you said a first marriage, you know, a child of a first cousin marriage would be a 94% chance of something abnormal.
Sorry, Mary, it's the opposite, actually. There's a 3% chance of a genetic disability if you have a normal marriage and children. Rises to 6% if it is a first cousin marriage. So it's a 94% chance that actually everything would be fine, even if you are born to two first cousins.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Well,
which you might say was a pretty good chance, and therefore, why make it illegal?
Well, I think it should be illegal, but I would like to say, they lived in Fulham. It was a very close, it wasn't what it is now. It was a very, communities were much closer then, so I can understand why it would be more common. The point I wanted to make was that I research family history quite a lot, and I've spoken genealogists, and I was surprised to find that it was fairly common back in the day, actually, for first cousins to marry. And that's really the point I wanted to make.
Yes, that it used to be a lot more typical and a lot more normal than it is now, but times change.
It was.
And most people now find it strange, to put it very mildly, I would say, Mariam.
I totally agree with you. I don't agree with it at all. But I just wanted to make people aware, really, that it was much more common. Mm. In the old days.
For sure, it is. But as I say, norms change, times change, and I think we've got to change the law to match that. Thank you, Mary. I'm lovely to talk to you this evening. This is interesting from Jarrow on WhatsApp. What are you going to do about it, Ben? Are we just going to make the marriages invalid, or are we actually going to punish people? And are we going to jail cousins who don't marry but cohabit? And I think cohabit maybe there, Jarrow, is a diplomatic way of saying have children. So if two cousins don't marry but still have children, and if we think that's where the problem lies, Do you criminalise that? Do you tell people who they can and can't have sex with, who they can and can't have children with? It's a very fair point about the practicalities of actually enforcing the ban that most of us seem to agree does need to happen. Margin's a new caller in Luton. Evening, Margin.
Evening, mate. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm good. You?
Yeah, very well, thanks. I just want to kind of highlight what you just mentioned there is, you know, what I've actually called about is how do you kind of police people liking other people? I feel like a lot is made about certain cultures or certain people from certain nationalities, backgrounds. But essentially what you're telling people or children or people growing up is you can't like so-and-so. And how do you really police that?
Well, I guess that there is a precedent for this, Margin, in the sense it's already illegal to marry your parents, your children, your grandparents and your siblings. How that is policed, I don't know, but it's not
You and I know, it's fairly quite, you know, instinctive that your mother isn't there for you to marry, nor is your father supposed to be touching you, you know. It's a kind of lived experience.
Yes, but we don't have a... There are not many people in this country who marry their siblings or their parents or their children because it is illegal. So if we make first cousin marriage illegal, then isn't it fair to assume that there might be some people who carry on doing it illegally, sure, but the vast majority of people would stop doing it?
No, and I agree. And you're talking to somebody that I'm not a proponent for cousin marriages at all. Mm. You know, I'm from a Bangladeshi background. I didn't marry my cousin. I know a lot of people think that Pakistani or Bangladeshi background for some reason dropped to marrying their cousin at the first instance. That is not correct. I know that for a fact.
Sure.
I know that there is communities out there that they have, you know, kind of halal dating, or they'll have, you know, I think they call it like bio data, where there's information passed around so that, you know, they can find matches. People don't really resort to cousin sort of marriages. Usually it's more of a tribalism. It's cultures that are more heavily tribal, you know, in Afghanistan
Are you saying it's dying out anyway, that fewer and fewer people
are
doing it?
Yeah, that's kind of the case.
Right.
You know, it's dying out anyway. It's dying out in most of the countries that they originate from in the global south. I feel like most people with access to education, it's not something that they kind of lean towards anyway.
So maybe the law doesn't need to intervene if it's dying out anyway.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of the case. What I'm trying to say is, you know, it's taboo in the West, it's taboo in the global North. It's pretty much taboo in a lot of the country. If you look at, you know, a lot of parts in the Far East, it's taboo there. You know, large parts of, you know, Northern Africa, it's getting taboo.
It's one thing that's it being taboo, and it is taboo in most places in this country. Of course it is. But I think it should also be illegal, because it's not just taboo, it's not just stigmatized. I think people have a moral and an ethical objection to it more and more. And I think the law needs to change to keep up with that, frankly. Margin, great first call. Thank you very much, Nick, for ringing. Miles is another new caller tonight in Croydon. Welcome to you, Miles.
Hello there. Good evening.
Hi.
Yeah, I was just listening to the Jenrick.
You want to pick up a Jenrick? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, first of all, it's the approach he took and the reasons why he's doing it, I think, is the first point I'd like to raise. You know, he didn't ask any of the people, why do you avoid paying £2 or £4 for contactless? It may be that, you know, they're struggling with lots of costs of living in London, work in London. They may, you know, so I'm not saying everybody, but, you know, a balanced view would be to look at it that way rather than trying to attract the vote back from where it's gone that he's desperate to do by showing how he's being tough on people who, you know, demonised in society. And I think the second point I would like to raise...
But demonising people who don't pay fares, Miles, seems to me a perfectly valid group of people to demonise because they are breaking the law. And yes, there will be a few that genuinely feel they have no alternative. I'm sorry, but I don't buy that is the vast majority of people. I think this is far more about entitlement than it is about poverty.
And that entitlement point brings me on to my second point, which is of everybody who could be out there challenging people who do this, the ex-minister who was, I think, branded by the mainstream press as Honest Bob Jenrick for very valid reasons. If your listeners want to Google the reasons, where we're talking about huge numbers, financial implications of decisions made.
You're talking about the £1 billion property development that Mr. Jenrick unlawfully approved when he was the housing secretary.
I would suggest people just Google Bob generally can see these stories.
All right, but that doesn't delegitimise the fact that he's pointing to a real problem, which is fair dodging.
Those numbers that were reported to have been avoided were 20 million journeys on the tube. But for one individual, so that's a huge amount of money, but that isn't seen as being a problem in a society where people struggle day in, day out.
But do you think that's why most people, Miles, are fare dodging, because they simply can't afford to pay the fare?
No, I think it's a combination of lots of things, but I'm sure there are an awful lot of families in London who do struggle. A lot of people use the bus, for example, rather than the tube to commute because it's cheaper. A lot of people, struggle with lots of parts of living in London, including access and availability of social housing, which in that part of London where he was challenging people without asking the underlying reasons why they were doing it, would perhaps be more useful and more helpful for a politician who's trying to understand and address some of the underlying problems.
There are people who steal because they feel they have no alternative, and we can have a conversation, and we have done and we will again, about whether that is moral or ethical, even if it is through desperation. There's an awful lot of people who shoplift because they can get away with it and they know they'll get away with it, and there's an awful lot of people who fare dodge because they know they can. And I think Mr. Jenrick, to be fair to him, is right to say that we've got to do something about that, because it's out of order that the vast majority of people are paying their fares, only just to see a small minority who think the rules shouldn't and don't apply to them. Miles, thank you for calling in tonight. That's it from me. I am out of time. Back with you 4 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. Hope you join me then. Today's show, as always, on Catch Up on Global Player and the brand new LBC app. You can download the new official LBC app for free from your app store right now. Thanks again for your company this afternoon. Coming up at 10 on LBC, Simon Marks. Right now, time for Ian Dale.
Thanks, Ben. As you've been hearing, Robert Jenrick has been exposing the amount of fare dodging that's going on the London Underground. And not just that, personally confronting fare dodgers on film. Now, I've had my differences with Mr. Jenrick, but on this, I think he's performed a public service. Why do so many people have no respect?